Hello, everybody. What is going on? This is About What Matters. I'm KC from Saki Brown. As always, my main man, Connor from New York. What's up, bro?
What's up, man? How's the Delmarva?
Yo.
DMV.
DMV is all right, but you know, no one goes outside and shit. So it's, we're still in lockdown mode, going
just
crazy.
Just watching tons of movies.
Yeah. So this is, you know, the Halloween October movie fest we're doing here. It's the one time a year where you get to watch. Well, I'm not even a big horror guy, but it's the one time of year where it's like it feels like it's cool to do it, and it kind of, it's just like Christmas movies. It fits the time.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not like I wouldn't call myself a horror guy either, but there's the ones that you have license to watch every October that are like, yeah, I gotta get back to that, and this is now's the time. So
just the time of like fall is I'm totally with it, you know.
Yeah.
Fucking
yeah.
Sweaters and pumpkins and leaves and
horror movies, baby.
And horror movies. How about that guy I showed you on Instagram? Did you look at his page, like all his dope ass pictures?
Yeah,
it's almost like
too much.
He built this world.
Okay, man.
Killed James Patrick. Yeah. Fucking his dogs are perfect. Fucking pumpkins everywhere, flannels.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we're gonna go with it. We're gonna run down the gamut of horror Halloween movies, but we're gonna definitely center it around Psycho, which is like the number one, the magnum opus of horror, in my opinion. I think that's kind of the universal thought.
Yeah, it's like the mother of them all, so to speak. Especially the ones, you know, the late 70s, 80s, and then even the 90s with Scream and all those. It's the one that kind of gave, it's like the mother of the slashers. I know there's slashers before that kind of claim that that crown, but Psycho's the king. It always will be.
So dropped in 1960, directed by Alfred Hitchcock, Anthony Perkins, Janet Leigh. How were you introduced to Psycho, and I guess we can go broader into Hitchcock.
All right, I'm trying to remember what this was for, but it must have been like a video rental that my mom got for us as a youngster, and the set tour from Alfred Hitchcock was like the trailer. It was like the 5 minute, 6 minute trailer, or whatever, and. So
it's such a pleasant the music in that trailer is like super pleasant. It's fucking it's so creepy.
Yeah, but like immediately, like we popped the VHS in or whatever. I don't know what we rented, but we popped it in and it like comes up, and we're like fast forwarding through, and like this comes up, and my mom's like, "Ooh, did you ever see this?" And I'm like, "No, what is this, Psycho? Like, I don't know about this." And she's like, "All right, let's watch some of this trailer," and like that creepy Hitch trailer where he's like. And here's where
never mind.
Yeah, exactly. And like instantly I was like, this is creepy as hell. I can't remember when the first time I saw the movie was. It must have been in high school at some point. But like it's been so kind of driven into my brain after that, and like studied in college, and like subsequently like kind of wearing the crown of being the king of the horror films, that like it's just imprinted on my brain now since that trailer. I like remember watching that trailer and being terrified just from the images of Hitch walking around the house. Like
a quiet little motel tucked away off the main highway. And as you see, perfectly harmless looking, when in fact it has now become known as the scene of the crime.
Shout out Videomania, bro.
Yeah. YouTube.
We rented all four. We rented Psycho for my mom was like all about it. All about Psycho, and then we went and got the rest of them. None of the sequels. There's four Psychos, and then
oh, that's right, yeah.
TV series Bates Motel. I want to get into some of the sequel stuff later. And so Psycho would be your introduction to Hitchcock?
Yeah, without a doubt, probably. Yeah. Yeah, without a doubt. It's like, I don't think I knew who he was or what he looked like. You getting that?
I'm getting that. It's pretty cool, man. Someone's making pasta or something.
It's like 1 a.m. No, it's construction outside. It was like 1 a.m. last night, and they're like drilling for a pipe. Where me and Jagger were like, wait, what the hell's going on? Anyway, yeah, I think that, like, I don't think I knew who Alfred Hitchcock was even while watching that trailer. I was like, I don't know. Like, this is the guy who made this. Like, I don't know.
Dude, when I was mad young, I remember watching Nick at Night, and it would have the Alfred Hitchcock Presents.
Yeah.
So I wasn't hip to Hitchcock, but I knew him specifically from that. Like, I knew if I saw him, I would know him because, like, they had like the side silhouette of his face on the Alfred Hitchcock Presents.
Right. Yeah.
And
yeah.
It was always when I turned it off because the shit was scary as fuck.
Yeah. My buddy still watches those like on a regular basis. I've never watched the show, but
yeah.
Anyway.
All right. So this is a film review for Psycho from Chris Taylor. In many ways, Psycho seems like the death knell for the studio system that would lumber on for a few more years before collapsing later in a decade under the weight of filmmakers and audiences sick of the old stultified formulas. He made this film, and it was obviously a swerve, you know, of what was made previously, and, right. And it definitely changed things. What does that mean to you? How does
it feels like Hitchcock was intentionally missing or going against everything he had been building up to that point, because previous to this was North by Northwest, right? So like, which is like a huge kind of all four quadrants, like all boxes checked, like huge Technicolor, like classic with America's leading man, Cary Grant. And then he goes and makes this in black and white in 1960. And it felt like Hitchcock getting back to his roots in a sense of like, A, saying fuck you to the studios and being like, I want to do this how I want to do it again. And also like, in many ways, just wanting to get back to like grassroots kind of creative filmmaking in a way. You know what I mean? Like, he was always so good at doing like outside of the box things as a director and like pushing the envelope as a director. And there's so many moments in Psycho where you get that again, whether it's a camera movement or like a shot of, you know, above the stairs when you know the killer comes out or whatever. Those are the things that like were exciting to him, I feel like. And it was almost like Psycho gave him the license to do these things again, rather than like, you know, a big budget cross-country trip with Cary Grant, you know.
One of the guys in the documentary said it was Hitch's revenge on Hollywood.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way to put it. It's like everyone's expecting something from Hitchcock at this point. He's a major voice in Hollywood, maybe the major voice in Hollywood in the 50s. That's like his conquering era, his conquering decade. And 1960 comes and he goes back to black and white and subverts all these expectations, not only with the story and the plot, but the aesthetic of the film and like what ultimately ends up happening with the film. He was very, like you said, leading up to this, he was very secretive. He didn't want anyone talking about it when they left, you know, because that would kind of take away everything that he'd worked towards to that point. And it was still, you know, although it was precious to him, it was still like, you know, an author and like an auteur having complete ownership over his thing. And he was kind of flexing his muscles in that way, you know?
So it was made for less than $1 million on purpose. So Psycho is sandwiched between North by Northwest and Vertigo. North by Northwest, $4.3 million budget. Vertigo, $2.5 million budget. Mm-hmm. His next film, The Birds, which we talked about, $3.3 million. So it was like, he didn't use a film crew, he used a TV crew.
Right, that's right. I was just going to say that, yeah.
So it was like completely stripped down. And he was like, I remember, I'm not sure where I heard it, but it was like, he wanted to see what a low budget film would be by someone who actually knew what they were doing.
Yeah, I think we were just talking about Alfred Hitchcock Presents. I think it was the crew from that he was like, why don't we get the TV show people to come and do this? But yeah, it's just a, like, it would be like What would a good comparison be like? I mean, it would be like Steven Spielberg making a movie for $10 million today, you know, where his budgets are like as big as they get and effects driven as they get. And it's like, what if Steven Spielberg went back to like a skeleton crew and made this passion project that he was like really kind of invested in as far as artistic expression? You know, that's kind of what Psycho was in a way.
Much smaller scale, but M. Night had like all these massive budget films, and then like him going back to Bear Screws was like because he kind of fell off. Yeah. But when he made The Visit in 2015, The Visit was like $5 million budget, made $100 million. But I mean, when he was doing like fucking Signs and The Village and shit, those budgets were like $100 million.
Yeah, because everyone was calling him the next Hitchcock after Sixth Sense, right? And it got too big and out of his hands like way too early. But yeah, it's funny that we're like starting with Psycho, and it's ultimately our favorite probably of the ones we're going to talk about today, because the influence it has on the rest of the movies that we're going to talk about is like so significant, and you don't get one without the other. You know what I mean? Like, it ushers in a new kind of element into horror, you know, that's just like undeniable for decades to come. That's like, that's ultimately its lasting impact, right? Is that it changed horror.
I read that Hitchcock bought the book for $9,000 from Robert Block, the rights to the book rather. And then this is from Turner Classic Movies. They said
which was based on a real thing that happened in Wisconsin, I think.
Because that's where Robert Block is from. He's from Milwaukee.
Right. So he wrote the book based on an actual event. It wasn't a retelling of these events. It was like a fictionalized version.
They said the Turner Classic Movies said Hitchcock bought as many copies of the novel as he could as to keep the ending of the film a secret.
Oh yeah. All these like kind of legendary and like
that was the big thing. Like the secrets you mentioned it earlier. Like,
yeah.
This was the big thing for him. You saw some of the signs outside, which I have never seen before, never seen again, probably. You can't enter the film after it starts. Like, fucking rules to the shit.
Yeah.
Signs outside the theaters. Yeah. You can't enter it after it's done. You know, asking them on the honor system, you know, please don't talk to your friends about it afterwards. Yeah. You know, fucking,
it's amazing.
Keep it secret. But I think he was at the point where he had that kind of fucking pull, you know, he had that kind of weight where he can, like, all right,
that's exactly right.
Hitch us, so
yeah, it's almost like with Tenet or something with Christopher Nolan. It's like if you get like a personalized note to the theaters by the director, and it's like, please don't spoil this for the people that are coming. I mean, it didn't really happen for Tenet because no one was going to the theaters, obviously. But and I still haven't really had Tenet spoiled for me. I haven't seen it, but it's the same kind of thing, right? It's like, I forget who else did this. But like directors specifically being like sending notes or like sending an email or putting it on Twitter, like, please don't talk about this, you know, like let people experience it. It's so much more rare these days for that to happen because people want to talk about it and people go and it, but it, like back then you probably could pull it off, and he did, because I mean, it was a huge craze.
So it's classic, and there's a couple of reasons why. The shower scene we talked about earlier, we're definitely going to get into that. But the way that it's set up, the way that the film's set up, right? It's like psychology almost. I don't know. I haven't read the books. I don't know if the book is the same way. But the way Hitch makes the film, where it's like you fucking are going deep into this relationship in the beginning. You're going, the money is like a big fucking thing. Big thing, big thing, big thing. And then we talked about the swerve earlier. 45 minutes into the film, right, None of it matters anymore.
Right, yeah.
Spoiler alert. None of it matters anymore.
It's the best.
And that's the best. What I think that's like the hook. It's like,
yeah,
it goes in a completely different direction.
Mm-hmm. That's that is the thing that like ultimately comes in like the, you know, the meta slasher that is Scream, like, and I wrote about this too, but the meta slasher that is Scream takes that and flips it, even it takes it even one step further with Drew Barrymore
in the beginning, big so name,
like, yeah, it's she's a big star at that point, it's the mid-90s, like, and you think you're gonna get some kind of time with her, but like knock her out in the first scene. But I think it's even more effective in Psycho because you get so invested.
It's a real slow play. They slow play it. You think that, so there's the relationship with the guy in the beginning, Sam. Mm-hmm. And then you get the relationship with Norman where they're having dinner and they're kind of connecting on a deeper level. And you think, you know, you're like, there's like some romance here, but there really is none at all.
Mm-hmm. It's a trick. The whole thing's a trick. And again, it goes back to Hitchcock being like, let's flip the thing on its head and let's say fuck you to the studio and audiences alike. And, you know, I'm sure the studio was like, wait, Janet Leigh's our star. How are you going to take her out 45 minutes in? It doesn't make any sense. And just to think about that in context, it had never been done. And ultimately, that's the shock that people were drawn to, like, you literally can't do this. Why are you doing this? So like outrage plus the rest of the film, you almost forget that you're outraged halfway through. You know what I mean?
Janet Leigh nominated for best supporting actress at the Oscars. Yeah. Hitch nominated for the best director. Anthony Perkins definitely snubbed a little bit, but great performance by him.
He's sick.
I'm not just playing to you. But the music on the ride, you know what I'm saying? When she's driving.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
The rain and stuff.
Yeah, it's so good.
It's I mean, forget the killings and the shower scenes and the cue that we all know, that's the high pitched strings that, you know, eventually fall out of unison and become dissonant. I agree with you. The car ride is like the piece that, if it weren't there, if it weren't at that good, the other stuff wouldn't work as well. I feel like that's Bernard Herrmann to a T. All his supporting stuff helps, and like Vertigo's the same way. And I Bernard Herrmann is outside of Psycho is a genius, and like was destined to be this legend anyway, and then he made Psycho with Hitchcock, so like, you know, it's almost like this, he was on the same level as Hitch before they made this, and then they both jumped up because of what this film did. And it's like, for film music lovers everywhere, Bernard Herrmann is the king. Like, it really doesn't get any better than his cues on all of Hitchcock's stuff. He's brilliant.
There's so many shower scene. There's so many interesting things about it. Talk to me about the music just a little bit, about the shower scene, in the shower scene.
So it's funny that like someone on the 78-52 doc mentioned, it might have even been Eli Roth, mention that the cue is ultimately, you know, if slow down the Psycho cue, you know, 50 times or whatever, and you get the Jaws cue,
yeah,
right? Like, which is a really interesting kind of way to think about it, especially in like the times of going on YouTube and hearing a song slowed down 100 times or whatever. Or like in the age of Inception, where they actually did that, you know, each dream was slowed, the song slowed down, however, whatever. But I mean, it's just, so simple. It's the same thing. I think I'm sure John Williams was thinking this when he was making Jaws. It's the same thing. The approach is the same in that, like, the simplicity of it is what makes it brilliant. And that's so hard to do as a composer, is to keep, you really just want to elevate emotions as a composer without getting in the way. I would argue
it's silent. Yeah, and then she turns around, and then I like when they said in the doc, it was like the heartbeat, like her heart rate goes up, and it's like this fucking sound.
That is sound. Exactly. That's the brilliance of Herman. I'm sure he was thinking about that, about what does your body actually feel like when you are frightened like that in this way. And even if it is a goof, or if it isn't a goof, what happens to your body? And ultimately your heart rate isn't going to slow down. Right. So like the dissonance gets wider and wider as the cue extends. Right. So at initially they're all playing the same note. All the strings are playing the same note, and the dissonance, you know, one side of the strings or whatever the cue is calling for, falls down the scale, and the other side is playing that high shrill note, which creates this dissonance that, like, there's literally nothing I can do. And that's the brilliance of Herman paired with Hitchcock, because it's almost like at this point Herman was working with Hitchcock so long that he could almost expect, or they had, you know, they just had this working relationship that they played off of one another like that, you know. But it's just, there's so much to say about that scene alone that, like, I mean, we got an hour and a half documentary out of it, and we were both like, this is amazing stuff, give me more, you know.
How about the melons?
Amazing. Like, I mean, I, and you, like, know that, you know, about the sound effect and the chocolate syrup and all that stuff, but watching them do it, and then the hunk of meat that they, like, mix in with it, it's just amazing stuff.
So Hitchcock brought in, like, a million different types of melons until he finally got the right sound of what it would be to stab human flesh, and it turned out to be the cassava melon. And then there was also, like, brought in a sirloin steak, and they're, like, filtering in these sounds. It's incredible stuff.
Yeah, it really is. It's the, like, the, again, talking about bringing Hitch back to, like, the roots of, and, like, the grassroots or the bones of filmmaking. And this is, like, this is really it. He's not working with 100-man crew. He's not working with giant movie stars of the time. He's working with a skeleton crew. They're doing everything on their own. They're not using the sound effects catalogs that Universal ultimately probably had at that point. They're doing it all in this, like, in their own little kind of sandbox, you know what I mean? And that's probably what made it fun for Hitchcock to make this movie. I don't know if he did have fun, but, like, ultimately I think that was what he was after.
So some stuff here. In the book, she was beheaded.
Right.
And Norman Bates was, like, a totally different character. He did the same things, but it wouldn't, I think you have to, he was a short, pudgy guy that was a drinker. It wouldn't play as well, I think, to have Anthony Perkins there. It kind of gave the chance, because you're trying to sell the fact that there might be something between these two or something, you know. She seems kind of excited when she's getting ready for the dinner that they have. So those are some of the differences between the book and the film. To get to Anthony Perkins, I don't know. There wasn't many things that I've ever seen of him besides Psycho. Mm-hmm. But his performance was so good. He's so good. He reminded me of Andrew Garfield a little bit.
Ah, that's a good call. Yeah, I like that. Instead of Vince Vaughn, right?
Oh, my God. Well, the remake, we can talk about it a little bit. Quentin Tarantino said, I've seen in multiple places, he said he liked the remake better. I don't know how. I've seen the remake a couple times.
I could probably guess what he means by that. I don't think he means it's a better movie. Because it ultimately can't be, you know. That's all. This is all we can move past the remake, right, like, after this. But ultimately it's like a failed experiment. that
it was an experiment. That's definitely what
that Gus Van Sant just wanted to. Yeah, he just wanted to try and see what would happen. And even Danny Elfman in the doc was like, "Don't make me redo the score. Like, I can't do any better than this Bernard Herrmann score. Like, don't make me redo this with brass." So it's like Gus Van Sant was just trying something. You know, had the courage to try it. You know, after Alfred Hitchcock, and ultimately it failed. I think Anne Heche is wrong. I think Vince Vaughn is wrong. It's
miscast. I think William H. Macy is right. I'll say that much.
Yeah.
He's good as Arbogast or Arbogast. How do you say his name?
Arbogast.
William H. Macy is good as Arbogast. Yeah,
he's never wrong. William H. Macy's never. Yeah,
he's always right.
On a director's level, he does like go for the exact kind of shots that Hitch was after, which makes it interesting, I guess. I'll probably never watch it again.
Yeah, no. Vince Vaughn's. Anyway. I can't do Vince Vaughn. I love Vince Vaughn, but I just can't do Vince Vaughn in serious things.
Yeah,
for the most part. True Detective series season two he's so bad. It might be the worst acting performance I've ever seen. Anyway, so some of the things that the shower scene inspired were super interesting to me. I know you had to like the hands part in the Jurassic Park.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I ate that up, dude.
So the hands in the shower scene, there's like her hands play such a big role, and they likened it to the opening scene in Jurassic Park. And then to see that Martin Scorsese shot Sugar Ray scene in Raging Bull, and they put them side to side.
Right. So I've heard him say that. I've never seen them compared. And it's like, It is like almost dead on with even duration of the clips. You know what I mean? Like duration of the cut, or duration of the film in between the cuts, and like angles and slow motion here. And it's almost identical. That was really quite amazing stuff. And like, again, that just goes to show you, it's not even just the horror genre, so to speak, that was impacted by this movie. I mean, people like Steven Spielberg and Martin Scorsese, who are arguably two of the greatest American filmmakers ever, were influenced somehow by this movie, this single scene, a single scene influenced American movies for years to come. It's just amazing. It's amazing stuff.
Psycho 2, Psycho 3, Psycho 4.
Have you seen the sequels?
Yeah, when I was young. Yeah, we rented them all when I was young. So he started, he came back for all of them. He got robbed of being nominated for an Oscar. I'll say it again.
It's interesting because like there are moments where I'm out and the next 5 minutes I'm completely like sucked back in to his performance. I think it's great.
It is great. I'm going to pick a nit on the last scene, the scene where he gets caught by...
The ending is like, you know, all the exposition and all the like explanations and all that, like the ending has aged poorly, but anyway, go ahead. What were you gonna say?
Well, yeah, I mean, he comes, major spoilers here, so
watch Psycho.
Yeah, Marion Crane's sister goes down into the basement. She finds mother. The famous shot of turning around, and that's fucking scary.
Yeah, like, that's terrifying.
No doubt scary. And then you see the big reveal that Norman Bates is mother. So he enters the basement room, and that's looks good. You can't even tell it's him. And he's got the knife raised. Great scene. It doesn't look like him at all because he's got this big fucking weird grin on his face.
Yes, exactly.
And then he gets caught from behind by Sam Loomis. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't even look like Sam has him like wrapped up, that he's just kind of got his arm around his shoulder. Fucking Perkins is giving this big, like, you're fucking squeezing my nuts. You know, got this big fucking grin on his face and like a painful way. And you can't be hurting that bad. So that would be the one nitpick I'd say on his performance, but
sure. That stuff bothers me less than like, you know, but it's one of those things that Psycho has its flaws, right? Like, it has its moments where you're like, ah.
It's also made 60 years ago, so we got to cut it some slack, you know what I'm saying?
Right, exactly. So, like, but, like, along with some of my other October favorites that are, like, flawed maybe more so than Psycho, that's part of their legacy in a way that, like, that's part of why they're so fun, or, like, that's part of why you love them so much, because there are these puzzles that are remain kind of solved, that specifically The Shining, it's like a big clusterfuck of a film. It like makes almost no sense, but that's the reason why I come back each year. You know what I mean? And Psycho ultimately, I think, has that same thing where it's like the flaws make it what it is, especially 60 years on or whatever it is, you know?
Jana Lee, who is first family of horror here, her daughter is Jamie Lee Curtis. She makes a cameo in Halloween H2O and gets in the same exact 1957 Ford sedan, which she's famously driving in Psycho. So Jana Lee, mom of Jamie Lee Curtis, Tony Curtis was her husband. Jamie Lee Curtis, you know, if you're on the Mount Rushmore of horror films, Psycho's on it, Halloween's on it. They are, you know, it's incredible how it worked out.
One A and one B.
What made Halloween work so well?
Well, I think, like, as far as its impact and legacy go, first, it ushered in this whole new genre of slasher. Like, the rules that they talk about in Scream, not to get ahead of ourselves, but, like, the rules were kind of made up by the Halloween script, right? And, like, you know, when I was writing about it, we can cut this out, but, like, when I think about Halloween, it's ultimately, and I reserve Halloween night for Halloween, it's like, you know, October 31st, that's when I watch Halloween. You have to, it's like just a rule. But all of the things, first off, it's a well-made film, like, aside from the horror genre, which kind of gets a bad rap, like, especially in the 90s and up until now, it's like generally low budget. 80s, same thing, low budget stuff, like people that can crank stuff out, directors that can kind of crank stuff out. And Carpenter was like, went against that in every way. He was like an artist, he did the score, he wrote the script. It was like, it was an auteur almost doing this slasher genre and like inventing these, you know, maybe he wasn't the first to do it. There was some Italian films that were doing similar things, but he brought it into American cinema and like made a quality movie first in a way, you know? So I think ultimately that's like its impact and legacy that changed horror forever. I mean, some would argue it did what Jaws did for the blockbuster. It like ruined horror. It was like too good. And all these copycats came along that people adore and people love, but like are almost unwatchable to people like us who aren't like horror aficionados, you know. But I can't say enough about Halloween and like what it did for like all the things I just said, what it did for the genre, what it did for like horror filmmaking. It's all on John Carpenter. He's brilliant.
Made for $300,000. It's so crazy.
Unbelievable. That's like what happens when you get a guy that can really do it all, right? Is like you're paying one guy to do the script, the directing, the score. You know, the same thing with Psycho. It's like he probably was like, let's just make a good movie with a small crew.
Psycho, another one where the music, I think horror in general, a lot of the good horror at least, the music played such a big role in that. That's the first thing I think of when, you know, I think of Halloween. I think of that. It's an awfully simple piano riff, I'd imagine, but it's so effective.
Yeah, and it's like this odd meter. I think it's in like 5/4 time or something, but so simple, 3/4 notes with a bass note changing that makes it more dramatic as it goes, and like that's it, right? It's like, you know, Halloween took what Psycho did, and like, I don't think you can plan for an iconic score. I mean, you have to try, especially with horror films, that to like tie your aesthetic and your whole feel and your killer essentially to a theme. And Halloween did it as well as Psycho, you know, as good as Psycho did with that shrieking cue, like Halloween did it just as well. And it's like, can you think of the Friday the 13th score? Like, I
don't know.
That's what I'm saying. So like,
and there's something to be said about the realism of both of them. You know what I mean? They're just sure. Like, Halloween's guy is wearing a mask, but he picks out the mask. You know, he's a regular guy before that.
Right.
He's crazy, but he's a regular dude. And that's what Psycho is. It's just like a guy who's not all right. Right. Whereas like with the Blob and all these other, like, it's almost a supernatural effect to it. There's a place for that, of course.
Sure.
That's why I like.
But you're right. The when it's rooted in realism, like Psycho and like Halloween, it for me and for you, it's more effective. It's scarier in a sense that like it's not so far fetched as like Friday the 13th is good in itself because Jason isn't the superhuman killer that he becomes in the sequels. But like it's still a little kitschy, a little campy. These are rooted in realism that makes them ultimately scarier because of it, you know.
Was Friday the 13th like the day? Was that a thing before Friday the 13th, or was Friday the 13th like, did that like start the?
No, I think that was like a. I think that's a reason to make a horror film called Friday the 13th. I'm sure it was like a
been a thing for years.
Yeah, like generations and generations. Like, I'm sure it was. I'm sure it was. Yeah.
So what else is on your list? You mentioned Scream, and like Screams are like the Scream films that I think the first one came out in 97.
Yeah.
It like ushered in a whole wave of these young Hollywood actors coming off like television shows and shit that are getting these films, and they play to like the mainstream, but at the same time, like, it fits the genre well.
I think what Scream did, which I think it was 96, but
good.
I think it's 96. But what Scream, the thing about Scream, the reason why I love Scream is how, and I feel like it's like such a nerdy thing to like explain this to people, but when you watch it and you've seen the classics that it's referencing, it's so self-aware of its own, you know. They talk about Jamie Kennedy's famous, like, the rules.
That's the most famous Scream scene, I'm telling you. Like, besides the Drew Barrymore scene, like, the rules scene, that's the best thing Jamie Kennedy's ever done.
Exactly. I was literally just watching it before we did this. But, like, the fact that that scene is in, you know, the Kevin Williamson script is so brilliant because of how self-aware it is within its own boundaries. So it's this meta text about the slasher films of yesteryear that are on the TV, that are referenced by the killers. There's quotes throughout. It's filled with all these like horror classic tropes and cliches, stuffed to the brim, and they say, we're gonna make a movie that plays on all of these tropes and cliches and have the people within the movie think they're in a movie, like talk like they're in a movie, and say, like, Neve Campbell's character famously at the end, but not in my movie, or like, you know, I don't want my story to be a horror movie or whatever. It's just like all these cool little self-referential meta commentary, meta slasher film nods that they know exactly what the classics are, and they flipped it all and made a classic on top of the class. Like, it's such an interesting thing what they did with Scream, which every year I watch it, I go, man, this script is brilliant. Like, the script is really the star because of how aware of its own history it is, you know. That's why I love Scream.
Courtney Cox at the height of her Friends fame also.
Yep.
And dude, besides having a name that's kind of similar, Scoot McNairy and Skeet Ulrich, modern day.
Yeah.
Look so similar. I can't remember what movie it was that, but, Sean Fennessy said, he said it was Skeet Ulrich, and I'm like, nah, dude, that's Scoot McNairy, you fucking idiot. And then like, I look it up and I'm like, what?
Yeah. Like Skeet is like playing the like skeezy, like,
yeah, in this film, he doesn't look like Scoot, but like nowadays,
no, but like, oh yeah. Yeah,
side
yeah,
by side, they look identical, bro.
Yeah.
So Scream, sorry, man, what are you gonna say?
Go ahead.
So Scream brought in, I Know What You Did Last Summer's of the World, mm-hmm. Went on to have, I Still Know What You Did Last Summer. I Still Know What You Did Last Summer is better. I'm telling you.
I don't think I've seen that one. I'm sure.
Really good Jack Black cameo. Really? Yeah. Really good Jack Black. It's so good.
That's awesome.
He's a Rasta guy. He's so fucking funny.
Yeah. So like the 90s post Scream was like 97. They even like jumped on with I Know What You Did Last Summer. I think 98 was, Urban Legend.
Urban Legends is like a classic. I would stand behind that film to anyone who wants to watch a horror film.
I asked Jackie earlier if she had seen it, and I was like, I don't think I've seen it since we watched it like in middle school at your house.
Yeah.
I'm like, damn, we got to spark that up because Rebecca Gayhart is in Scream 2. We started right after Scream earlier, and I was like, oh shit, Urban Legend, like we got to watch that. Scream really, again, sparked a whole genre, much like Halloween did. It like, you know, by like reigniting the classics of yesteryear, it like sparked its own kind of teen horror, so to speak, like genre of the 90s.
So Scream went on to have Scream 2, Scream 3, which I liked. Where there's a movie inside the movie, Scream 4, Scream 4.
I watched the other day, yeah.
And then there's also a TV show on MTV, which I'll never watch. But you know, you get it's all about the license, the branding, you know.
And five is announced with Neve Campbell, no Wes Craven. So we'll see what happens.
Master of Horror.
He did all four, which is amazing, considering.
But. Yeah. As long as you have the original cast or the star,
yeah,
that's okay in my book. As soon as you go into the world of
Halloween
3 and you know, the third, I Still Know What You Did Last Summer, it's like a totally different cast. You lose me.
What's the third one called?
I don't know, but something. It's like it's like The Sandlot 2. You know, it's like fucking bullshit. What else you got? Anything? Any other horror movies that you always want to recommend or that they always get to?
The only other one that I like try to do every year is The Shining, and we kind of talked about it a little bit already, but
I can't do one,
like, go ahead.
I can't do Shelley Duvall, dude. I mean, the film, it's a good film, but Shelley Duvall, I mean, she actually plays well in the horror.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. It's like almost part like a of ghost. The movie, you know. Yeah
or something.
Yeah, but again, that's one that like you can't quite figure out, and like the puzzle only gets larger every time you watch it. So, and it's just like Stanley Kubrick's movies in general. Like, I can't say I have like a love affair with watching his stuff. It's really, well,
we once did mushrooms and watched tried watching
Clockwork Orange.
Clockwork Orange. I don't think that ended well.
Right. No. I think we got about 3 minutes in, and we're like, no. But yeah, I mean, they're all difficult and they're all tedious, but again, it's like Halloween ends on Halloween night, and it's like, oh, I'm going right to The Shining. It's just another one of those ones that, I mean, it's barely a horror movie. It's just so disjointed and like disconcerting and like so kind of disjointed that you are uncomfortable watching it, which ultimately makes it a horror film. I wouldn't say it's like the scariest movie ever, but the whole puzzle pieces don't fit, which makes your brain kind of feel like it's out of sorts while you're
no, watching. Of course,
you know what I mean. So that's
of course
that's the only other one I get to. But
hotels are a great setting for horror.
The best, yeah.
Hotels with snow, even better.
Even better. Here's a question for you.
Shoot.
What about found footage stuff? Where do you land on?
Well, I remember getting Blair Witch like as soon as it came out.
Yeah.
And I was like,
which is excellent. I mean, it's excellent. It's held up.
It's held up, and it's actually like probably 30 minutes down the road, somewhere in Maryland.
Right.
But so that came out, and it was like I think it was filmed for like $100,000 or something. It was like, yeah, that was like, I don't know. See, now I don't know. When it came out, it was kind of like, I felt like the press run was like, this is real.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That's what,
yeah,
I felt like. That's what they were trying to establish. I know now, after
it was like, yeah, it was
living
like
a life.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
Let me see if it was.
It was like the first viral marketing campaign that like was actually successful, that people like you and I were like,
200,000.
That shit's real, dog. You know,
200,000, yeah, and it made 250.
All of the found, like the Blair Witch kind of jump-started the found footage stuff, and those are all super cheap. That's why they're still cranking out,
yeah, their
normal activities and stuff. But that was like that was the one. Like, we're talking about the ones that jump-started their respective kind of things. I mean, Blair Witch was the one, and then the Paranormals came. Which the Paranormals are decent too. The first one's pretty good.
We talked about The Shining, and that's got to bring it into Misery, which I don't know if really classifies I don't know if it even classifies as a horror film.
Yeah, that's
But Kathy Bates is so good. Like, I just watched Misery a couple of days ago, and I was completely blown away. Mm-hmm. You know, you see Kathy Bates, what she is now, and you always wonder why she has this reputation. I've seen About Schmidt, and she was good in that, but kind of always wonder how she got this reputation. And then you see Misery, and it all makes sense. It's like, this is her best performance. This is why she's a legend. It's clear to me. I don't have to ask any more questions. Like, she's a fucking legend. She's amazing in it. I recommend Misery to anyone. Where do you stand? Did you make it through the whole thing?
Yeah. I think it's like, it almost reads, or it almost plays a lot like Stephen King's books read. It's like a little bit, and I don't know if that's the one that he was like, oh, this is most like, I think it's something else, but it's a little like,
great poster too, by the way.
I loved it, and I like think it's great, but it was made in 90, and it feels like it was made in 90. It's
I kind of like that though.
Yeah, no, it's cool, but it did. I was expecting to be really invested, and I was kind of like the Rob Reiner of it all, like the direction and like the kitschy and like the sheriff. It was very like Twin Peaksy, or like, which Twin Peaks does its own thing in that way. I mean, Lynch just like takes it to another level. So this was like kitsch in the opposite way, or like camp in the opposite way, where it took me out a little bit, and I'd heard so much about it, and like, but I mean, the scene, the sledgehammer scene is just like,
I didn't know it was coming, bro.
Yeah.
I had no clue.
It's called hobbling. Oh,
like,
that to me is the stuff that is like, is tough. You know what I mean? I think James Caan is just all right. Like, he's phoning it in a little bit, but I
think so.
It's good. I like it, but if we're nitpicking it, that's what I'd have to say.
All right. Any underdogs? I would say, anything with like, fucking like, not crazy children, but like corrupt, like the good son.
Yeah. I don't, there's like a whole subgenre of like occult stuff, Children of the Corn and like, Wicker Man and like all that stuff. I haven't really, dived into. Like, I don't,
have you seen The Good Son?
Yeah, I've seen The Good Son, but it was years ago. I mean, I don't really like
Macaulay Culkin's so scary in that shit.
Is he really? Like, I don't like. I don't remember.
Well, like,
oh shit, this is scary.
Like evil children, dude.
Right. Yeah. The only let me think. You gotta definitely check out The Birds. I know we were talking about this earlier, but like, The Birds is the only other Hitchcock film that I would categorize as like actually horror. You know, I know he's like the master of suspense or whatever he's called. But The Birds is the other, the sister of Psycho in that it's cynicism towards like humanity is like plain to see and really quite terrifying because of it. There's the lack of score, especially at the end. You're talking about Bernard Herrmann. The lack of score at the end is terrifying, dude. The ending is so good.
In Psycho, there's a lot of bird stuff too. Hitchcock's obsessed with birds, apparently.
Yeah, the
her name was Crane.
Taxidermy. Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
You're eating like a bird. They're in a room filled with birds. A lot of bird stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting that he went on to make a movie called The Birds.
Oh, he knew, bro.
Yeah, do it. And the other one, have you seen Hereditary? The Ari Aster film from 2018?
Maybe.
Hereditary is one of the, like, new horror doesn't really get me excited. And I know Chris Ryan would have a lot to say about that, but
it looks freaky, bro.
This is the one that I was like, oh, again, you know, there's a master filmmaker behind the scenes here.
Oh, well, he did Midsommar too, and I've heard a lot about that.
Watch them both, man.
Midsommar's
a little less of like pure horror because it's daytime the entire time, but there are like several mushroom trips that did give me the willies.
How do you feel about Jordan Peele?
I'm one of the few that's mid, I guess, on Jordan Peele. I don't know. I like Get Out. I thought Us was ultimately not great. But I'm excited that he's like doing his thing in Hollywood. Like we needed a guy like that.
Yeah. No, it's cool to have someone with like an original vision and like breaking the mold.
Ultimately that's why he's exciting to me. I think Get Out's a little overrated, but ultimately great.
I don't know. I'm gonna definitely watch The Birds.
You should.
You watched The Staircase, right?
The doc?
The doc series?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a theory that it was a bird. Like a because of like whatever wounds she had on her head.
On the Reddit message boards or where?
I don't know. No, I think they did like it was part of one of the lawyer who's like a great character in the docuseries.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like gone on and done some speeches at conventions and stuff, and it's always a topic that he brings up.
Mm.
So, yeah, the birds.
That's weird.
Yeah, I don't know how. I want to see The Birds and kind of get a. I'll make my final judgment.
Do The Birds and get back to me. I think you'll like it. Because I loved it, but I think that's all I really do.
That's there's not many movies. There's like, so you have Halloween movies where you have like, how about Hocus Pocus?
No, fully out, man. Fully out. I know it's controversial, but I feel like
I haven't, the
backlash is coming for Hocus Pocus. It's on too much and it's not good. I watched it last year for the first time and I was like, this isn't good. And that's why I probably didn't like it, because I never saw it as a youngster.
So same thing. That's a Vicky's like, gotta watch Hocus Pocus, gotta watch Hocus Pocus. I'm like, let's watch the trailer. I'm like, no way, I'm not watching Hocus Pocus. She's like, yeah, if you saw it when you were a kid. I'm like, you're probably right. That's why I love Blank Check and fucking
Well, I House hope Guest. I'm like, we'll do the Christmas movies pod, but like I hope, and so far it's not true, but like I hope the movies that we like that are the Christmas classics aren't like, don't become what Hocus Pocus is to Halloween. Like, not good, only good because we liked it when we were young. You know what I mean?
Oh no, I think like.
But all my nieces and nephews like the Home Alone. So
Home Alone. So that's what I was gonna ask you. Hocus Pocus is to Halloween as blank is to Christmas. Nightmare on Elm 34th Street, whatever that. Miracle on 34th Street.
Nightmare on 34th. No, I don't know what's become like the. To me, it's Elf. But
okay.
Elf.
Okay.
Because Elf is not going to be good in a couple years, I bet. I'll bet it out. Let's play that in Vegas somehow.
Okay, definitely. He's definitely playing it hard. I don't do Elf.
I'm not an Elf guy either. We're gonna get shit for this, but so be it.
Home Alone will always stand up. Christmas Vacation will always stand up, yes. And I think Christmas Story will always stand up as well.
Oh,
Christmas Story might be the Hocus Pocus.
Christmas Story might be the Hocus Pocus. Damn. Yeah, you know why? You know, here's why. It's because it's on all the fucking time. It's on all day Christmas Day on TBS, which, like, go to Freeform right now and hope. I bet you Hocus Pocus is on.
Dude, like, you're right.
Too much. You're saturating, man.
You're not. You know how you know Hocus Pocus is on too much? When the KJP Fall Guy is watching Hocus Pocus on one of his Instagram posts. That's how you know it's not too much.
Right, exactly. He made a whole post dedicated to fucking
Hocus Pocus.
Get that shit out of here, man.
Yeah.
All right.
Over and out. Great talk. Go watch your Halloween films. We'll be back in December when it's time to watch Home Alone.
Hell yeah.
All right. Peace. All right,
man. See you.